you're sitting there listening to KCUR, so of course you're happy. But what is that, this happiness? Is it just a particular arrangement of chemicals in your brain, or is there something more? Something true not just of your body, but of your real self, even your soul? I'm Brian Ellis, and today on Central Standard, we explore the philosophy of the mind and ask if we are more than the cells that make up our brains. And later...
From KCUR News, this is KC Currents. Reporting news and culture in Kansas City's diverse communities and beyond. I'm Dolores Jones.
That music, that program, a fixture of this station's lineup for about 9 years, is going away for now, but the mission continues. We'll look back at KC Currents and look forward to what's next in this time slot, weekdays here at 89.3. All that and tell KCUR today on Central Standard after the news. So, what's happening when you feel an emotion or experience pain or have an idea? On a certain level, that's a scientific question. There's a chemical reaction or an electrical trigger in your brain. But is it also a different kind of question? Is our mind more than our brain? Are we in our fullness as individuals more than just bodies, but also souls? Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Today is one of our occasional ventures into the world of philosophy. And today, guiding our exploration of the philosophy of the mind is UMKC Professor Susanna Reinard. Susanna, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
And also, Augustine Rayo, philosophy professor at MIT. He's in town for a guest lecture to some students over at UMKC, and he's going to be part of our conversation today, too. Welcome.
Hi. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, welcome to you both. I guess I might have thought that all philosophy was philosophy of the mind. So when we started talking about this topic, I need a little help. What are we talking about here today? What is this concentration, this area of inquiry, philosophy of the mind, all about? Susanna?
Well, it's particularly focused on mental phenomena. So, for example, emotions, desires, beliefs. Philosophy, other than philosophy of the mind, might tackle questions about religion or questions about language or other such questions. So philosophy of the mind is really focused on that inner mental life that we all have.
Okay. And is it is this about more than just sort of how we think? Does this get to more existential questions, I guess?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's really about what we are fundamentally as human beings. As you yourself mentioned earlier, Brian, are we just bodies or is there more to it? Is there a mental realm that's something over and above our bodies?
Okay, so different areas of philosophy basically answer different questions. What are some of the key questions that sort of identify where you stand, how you define your philosophy of the mind? What are the questions you're trying to answer?
Yeah, well, one big one is... is there something mental over and above the physical? So Augustine and I take different positions on this question. Augustine tends more towards a physicalist view, whereas I tend towards more of a dualist view. And hopefully we'll be able to resolve our differences a bit over the course of the next couple of minutes.
Well, we'll see if that happens.
We'll see.
Maybe our listeners can decide which one they are as they hear them described, too. Well, and let's start with that. Augustine Rayo, you are something of a physicalist in this question. Tell us what that means.
That's right. I am. So physicalism is the view that there is nothing in the world over and above the physical. And in particular, that the mind is nothing over and above the physical. So to a first approximation, the mind is nothing over and above the brain.
So the brain, the cells, the tissues, the chemicals, whatever electrical impulses or whatever are in there, that's all there is to the mind.
That's right. And I actually brought a prop to the show that I'm hoping might help illustrate what I mean when I talk about nothing over and above.
Now, they did tell you it's radio, right?
So I'm told. But I'm thinking that maybe you can hear my prop. So what I brought into the show is a piece of paper on which I drew with a black marker a circle.
Okay.
And part of what that means is that different areas of the piece of paper are colored different ways. Most of it is white, but there are some areas which are colored black. And it's very natural to think that the fact that there's a circle on my piece of paper is nothing over and above the fact that those particular regions are colored black. So the idea is that the same thing happens with the mind. The fact that I have certain mental states is nothing over and above the fact that my brain has certain physical properties.
So the circle doesn't exist other than the fact that a section of the paper, a line in the shape of a circle, is on the page.
That's exactly right.
But other than that, there's no real circle.
Well, what I would say is that there is a real circle. It's just that what it is for there to be a circle is for there to be certain distributions of ink on the page.
So the implication then is that a lot of what people think is real or is important, pieces of their identity or the reality of ideas or experiences, they may think that that is perhaps supernatural or perhaps exterior to them, some sort of heavenly or otherworldly. You're suggesting that even apart from sort of supernatural experiences, even just things as simple as emotions, those things all come down to the chemicals, the tissues, the cells.
That's right. It's not that they're not real. So, of course, we have emotions. It's just that in the same kind of way that some people think that chemical phenomena can ultimately be reduced to physical phenomena, so I think that mental phenomena can ultimately be reduced to stuff going on in the brain.
All right. Well, that's Augustin Rao. He's a philosophy professor at MIT. He's in town speaking at UMKC, where Susanna Reinerd is a professor of philosophy. And Susanna, you take a different approach to these important questions of the philosophy of the mind. What's the other view?
Well, the other view that I want to focus on is typically goes by the name of dualism. And there's a prominent argument for dualism that I'm hoping to discuss. And it comes from the Australian philosopher Frank Jackson. And it goes as follows. Imagine that we have a brilliant neuroscientist, let's call her Mary, and let's suppose that she has learned everything there is to know about the physical nature of your brain, and she understands your visual system and all of that. Let's further suppose that she's learned this by reading black and white textbooks in a completely black and white room, and that she never, in fact, has ever seen color. Okay. Now, I think it's plausible that if Mary were to leave her room and encounter the color red, say, for the very first time, say she leaves and observes a beautiful sunrise, that in seeing red for the first time, she's learning something new, something that she didn't know before. Namely, she's learning what it's like to see the color red. But if that's true, then I think physicalism has to be false, because according to physicalism, all facts are physical facts. And we already said that Mary knew all of the physical facts when she was in her black and white room, right? She learned everything there was to know about the physical nature of the brain and the visual system. And yet, I claim, when she leaves the room, she learns something new when she sees red for the first time. And if so, there must be non-physical facts.
So is the argument of a dualist that there is truth or reality that is outside of what can be explained medically, scientifically?
Well, that's an interesting categorization, but certainly there's reality outside of the physical. So once you've said everything there is to say about the physical nature of the brain, there's still an open question, namely, what are the mental states of that agent like? And so, that's something that's not determined just by physical descriptions.
So the contrast to physical is mental.
Yes.
I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. If you're finding this intriguing, but you it raises questions for you, or if you already can say, well, I'm a dualist and here's why, or I'm a physicalist and here's why, give us a call, 816-235-2888. Let me ask the two of you, who both represent learned philosophers, who represent schools of thought that go beyond just yourselves. Who's in the majority these days in the philosophical community?
I'm the underdog here.
Okay.
I think these days physicalism tends to be the more dominant view. Although, following the argument that I gave from Frank Jackson, there has been a bit of a resurgence, a bit of interest in dualism recently. Although still, I think I'd have to say the majority is physicalism.
And why is that, Augustine? Why has the physicalist view gone into the ascendancy in the philosophical community? Other than the fact that you're right.
Well, hold on a minute there, Brian.
before I answer that question, I mean, let me just say that it's not that physicalists don't feel the pressure from the other side. I mean, this argument Susanna was talking about, I'm not sure I know exactly what to say about it. But anyway, answering your question, I think it's because it supplies a simpler picture of the world. So just to put it for a moment in theist terms. So think about God making the world. So if you're a physicalist, you think that when God was done creating the physical, so when he had created atoms and arranged them so as to create mountains and volcanoes, he was done. But if you're a dualist, then you think that there was still something that needed to be done. God needed to do something extra to make it the case that we have beliefs and emotions and desires. And that just means that we have a less simple picture of the world.
816-235-2888 is the number to call to join our conversation. You can also email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Can the mental be reduced to a subset of the physical? Are you more than your body and the tissues and cells and chemicals that make up your brain? What do you believe? 816-235-2888. 235-2888. I guess I was surprised, Augustine, to hear you make the theist argument for physicalism. I think it might be easy to sort of portray this as a non-religious, scientific, atheist debate versus religious, people who believe in the soul and supernatural. But that's you'd say that's not the debate at all.
I think you're right about that. In fact, I think that God's creation would be even more elegant if physicalism was true. Because it means that just by creating the physical, God dealt with everything else. And you know, what could be more perfect? What could be more wonderful than that?
So if you have a religious view, it might be a question of how you think God worked rather than whether there's a God.
Exactly.
I see. What do you think, Suzanne?
Yeah, well, I'd love to jump in here. One interesting thing is that the arguments that people often give for dualism, including the argument that I sketched earlier, these arguments are meant to be compelling to anyone regardless of your initial religious persuasion. So, you know, the key premise in the argument I gave earlier was just that Mary learns something new when she sees red for the first time. And that thought can be compelling even to someone who's initially inclined to be an atheist. So I do think the religious, non-religious divide doesn't line up quite exactly with the physicalist, dualist question.
Well, and let me ask you about that. You said you don't know exactly how to respond, Augustine, but it is fairly compelling, and it seems to resonate even with human experience. Even if you didn't grow up in a box that's all black and white and experience red for the first time, we are always experiencing facts outside of ourselves, which are clearly true. I mean, how does the physicalist respond to that compelling argument that there is more to our life than what is chemically within us?
Well, it's tricky. I don't think there is broad agreement amongst physicalists about how to respond, but let me tell you how I think one should respond. So here's a fact about bicycle riding. One can know how to ride a bicycle even if one is not able to explain how one does it. So for example, I recently discovered that if you're going slow and you want to turn left, what you actually need to do is lean right a little bit. That came as an enormous surprise. And if I had been explaining to someone how to ride a bike, I would have not known this and given them the wrong information. But of course, there's some sense in which I knew that. There's some sense in which the information was in my cognitive system, as evidenced by the fact that I'm able to ride a bike. So I think the lesson of this is that sometimes there is information in our cognitive system that's available for some purposes but not others. So what I think in the Mary case is that this information about what color the tomato that Mary was shown, as it were, the first time she saw red, that information was in the system from the start. But it was only available for, let me say, intellectual purposes, only available for things like answering the question, what color is the thing you're about to be shown. It was not available for the purposes of, for example, imagining what it's like.
Well, and I guess, Susanna, the question for you then out of that response is, how do you prove otherwise? I know you're not coming at this from as a scientist. You're coming at this as a philosopher. But, I mean, when we're speaking of chemicals or data, we can point to that. We can at least imagine what that looks like or what that substantively is. How do you make a case for something that cannot be seen, something that is by definition not tangible?
In fact, I think we have more direct access to our mental lives than to the physical nature of the world in many cases. What it's like to see the color red is something that I can discover just by introspection, as long as I am in fact observing a red object. So I would say our access to our mental lives is direct and unmediated in a way that is not true of our access to the physical world. So in a way, we might actually be in a better position to access what's going on with us mentally than some physical questions.
So the intangible is more real than the physical.
I'm not sure about more real, but maybe we have a better access to it than to some of the others.
Maybe more real to you in the moment.
Could be.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. 235-2888, that's what Elise called. She's calling from Pleasantville. Good morning, Elise.
Oh, good morning.
What are your thoughts about physicalism versus dualism and the philosophy of the mind?
I guess pretty much how I see it. I have like a mixed view. I kind of see both, I guess. Pretty much we have like certain senses like taste and sight where we can see things around us, but we also have invented tools to see things that, like say infrared, that our bodies aren't capable of seeing. So I think that there's still things in existence that we just don't have senses to discover yet.
So, and you think that, does that make you maybe more of a physicalist, though, to say that, like, infrared light exists, even though you can't see it, we just didn't have the tools early on to perceive it? Does that make you think that maybe things like ideas or emotions fall into that same category?
I guess there's always going to be, like, abstract concepts that aren't actually physical out there, such as, I don't know, how we look at art and say we like it evokes feelings and stuff, because I guess there are some intangible things out there.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the reflection, Elise. Thanks for thinking through these issues with us. Have a good day. Elise raises the point. She uses the illustration of infrared light, something that we created tools that eventually we could perceive this thing that has existed all along, but we just didn't know about. Is that different than what we're talking about today?
Well, I would say that from a dualist perspective, I would want to completely agree with Elise that there's lots about the physical world that we certainly haven't discovered yet and that we need to use experimental methods to discover. And so I think that is compatible with the dualist framework that I want to work within. One other thing I might want to pick up from Elise's question is the idea of there being some intangible things or things out there that may not be completely physical. And I think there are examples of this other than the mental. This takes us a bit in a different direction, so I don't want to go here long. But numbers, for example, you might think that we can have some knowledge about numbers. For example, we can know that the sum of 2 and 2 is equal to 4. And that's knowledge that we can have without doing experiments. That's just knowledge that we gain purely by reflecting. And you might think that knowledge of our mental states is similar in that respect.
What do you think, Augustine? Does this convince you to become a dualist?
Well, believe it or not, my specialty is the philosophy of mathematics. So I have thought a lot about this. And here is something very interesting that I have come to believe. I've come to believe that mathematical accomplishment is also a matter of accessing the same information for some purposes, but not for others. So at the end of the day, I think there's a very deep connection between these two things.
All right. 816-235-2888 is the number. Chris is calling from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Good. I just wanted to make a comment about the really present the case for the theistic side of what we're talking about here. The lady who's on, and I apologize, I don't
Susanna Reiner, yes, go ahead.
Okay, Ivana. You know, I would agree. I have a bit of a dualist approach, but whereas it seems to be a hesitation to say it's supernatural, where the where your view might be it's outside of our mind. But I would say from a theistic side, it would be I see a dualism where there's a good, there's an evil, there's two, there's a right, there's a wrong, there's truth, there's non-truth, you know. So yes, it is an outside of the mind, and but that would be attributed to the fact that there is a creator, there is a God, there's a being that has created all this that gives us that sense. So when you say that, it just makes me think, yeah, you know, what my background would be and what my belief would be is that the God of the Bible would have put that in us to give us that realization.
Sure.
So really, it goes back to and the gentleman from MIT saying, you know, it's all physical. I think problematic. The problem with that would be is that if we accept that as everything is physical, then things of crime, you know, all sorts of the bad we call bad in the world would need to be accepted because it's,
okay, because it's just part of us. Sure. Let me let me ask our guests to respond to that, Chris. I really appreciate your call. First of all, Susanna, he suggests that really the dualist position is an inherently theistic one. It calls for the belief that this was created by an outside creator.
Yeah, well, I think that you don't have to be a theist if you're a dualist, although many theists will be dualists. So maybe the direction of logic goes one way but not the other. So, you know, I think it is perfectly possible to believe that there are mental phenomena over and above the physical, and nonetheless not also believe that there's a God who created those.
So what are they? I mean, I don't mean to interrupt, but what are they then? If they're not, you know, if these things aren't created by a supernatural force or power, where'd they come from?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think we have a similar question when we ask about the physical. You know, anyone who denies the existence of a creator will have to give some answer to that question, whether you're a physicalist or a dualist. And I don't have a personal theory all completely worked out right now about that question. I think it's a really deep and interesting one.
Yeah, and there was you were referenced as well in Chris's comments, Augustine. You said he said if you are merely a physicalist, if you don't believe there's something true beyond the physical, how do you explain something like crime? Where does that come from?
I think that this is a very deep issue, and more generally, and this is something that was also raised, is the issue of what happens to the distinction between good and evil. So in a physicalistic world, what does it mean to say that some things are good? I think that one way of thinking about these issues is to start with the theist perspective and ask, is it the case that things are good because that is what God commands? Or is it the other way around? Is it that God commands things because they are good? If you think of things in the second way, so if goodness does not stem from God, but is already there and God is just commanding us to do what is already good, then the difference between the good and the bad is already there in the world. And that means that even the physicalist can have a distinction between good and evil.
We're talking about philosophy of the mind with Susanna Reinert of UMKC and Augustine Rao, philosophy professor at MIT. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. 2888, not the pledge drive number, but the call-in number, 816-235-2888. Let's talk to David in Overland Park. David, good morning.
Hi. I'd like to thank both your guests. This is a very interesting topic. My first question is, why dichotomize and just have either dualist or realist? Not that I'm aware of a third or fourth position. But the next question is, are they familiar with the theory of swarm semiotics? In other words, the organs and the systems in our body, the cells, act like insect swarms. And then when you have the whole body is in a swarm of swarms. And in that theory, it talks about the immune system, which actually can have a lot of effect on our thoughts and our emotions and our feelings, is almost like a floating brain. So we would have basically two minds, the physical mind, which is, you know, encased in the brain, and then this floating mind of the immune system, which can have a great effect on our thoughts and emotions.
Okay, David, appreciate the question. First, David asked, are there only two positions? Are you either a physicalist or a dualist, or is there something else?
Well, I think on the way that we've set up the debate, there are just two positions, thinking of dualism as the negation of physicalism. But there are philosophers who've thought that that distinction is a bit misleading, and that so, for example, you might think that the notions of the mental and the physical don't really make sense, or there's something that we have a hard time really grasping. So if you had a view like that, then you might think that you didn't have to take one or the other of these sides. But something else that I wanted to pick up from the comment is this question of the nature of the interaction between the physical and the mental. And as I think David mentioned, you know, our physical states affect our mental states affect our physical states, and the question of exactly how this interaction takes place is, I think, one of the challenges for a dualistic position like the one I defend. It can be a little mysterious prima facie to see how it is that mental phenomena could causally interact with completely different physical phenomena, and I think that's a difficult question for a view along the lines that I find plausible.
Do you agree with that, Augustine?
I totally agree. I totally agree.
Of course, because it disagrees with her view.
But I think that there's something else that David brought up, which is relevant to a challenge for physicalists. And that's that intuitively, we can imagine a mind without a body. Mm-hmm. And if you're a physicalist, you have to somehow explain why that thought is incorrect. An interesting thing that David brought up is that investigation as to how the mind works and how the body works has revealed that it might work in completely unexpected ways. And this is important because when the physicalist tries to explain the challenge of how it is that the mind emerges from physical phenomena, he may need the full resources of our best new science. So if there's science to suggest that we are swarms in some sense, I want to hear about it because that might help me explain how it is that the mind emerges from the brain.
Susanna?
Yeah, well, just to pick up on the possibility that Augustine mentioned, and this is a different way into the dualist picture, one sort of really vivid way of bringing out the scenario is goes like this. Imagine that you're standing in a room and looking in a mirror. And you're looking in the mirror and you notice an object next to you disappear. And you observe the place where the object was and you see, in fact, yes, it has disappeared. This seems totally coherent so far, if a little far-fetched. Now, it seems that, and here's the crucial bit, it could happen. It's not incoherent to suppose that as you're looking in this mirror, you notice your body disappearing, just as previously you noticed the chair disappearing. And yet, nonetheless, you continue to have thoughts, you wonder what's gone on, you have emotions and you react to it. And if this situation is conceivable, if it's not incoherent, then I think that goes some way towards showing that the mental is something essentially different from the physical.
Let me ask you one more question, and maybe some of our listeners, maybe those who don't spend most days talking about philosophy are sort of sitting there scratching their heads asking this question. Why does this matter? And by that I mean, would a person live differently? Would they make decisions differently, believe something different about their neighbor based on whether they are a physicalist or a dualist?
Well, I think many of us just innately have a deep curiosity into what we are as entities and as beings in the world. And so for me anyway, I just really want to know, you know, am I just a body or am I something more? And so I think, you know, many people can sort of relate to that innate curiosity we have. And there are potential ways in which this might have implications elsewhere. You know, dualism opens up the possibility to an afterlife, perhaps.
Oh, okay. And Augustine, any practical implications you'd lift up?
Well, I think the issue is complicated. but it might affect how one thinks about psychiatry. Because if it turns out that the mind is nothing over and above the brain, then what you do when you take a drug might affect you. It might affect your mind and not just your brain.
Well, we're going to leave it there. This is a really fascinating conversation, and I am sorry that we didn't get to a full board of phone calls, including Frank and Neil and Terry and Brent and Susan. I apologize that we didn't get to your calls. Thank you so much to our guests, Agustin Rayo, a philosophy professor at MIT, and Susanna Reinert, a philosophy professor here at UMKC. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Great discussion, Brian.
When we come back, we will hear our regular Tell KCUR segment, and then also a look back at KC Currents and a look ahead to the future of morning programming here on KCUR. So stay tuned. I'm Brian Ellison. This is Central Standard on KCUR. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. It's time for Tell KCUR. Every week we send out a question on the air over Facebook and Twitter, and every week your answers come back by phone and email and social media. Speaking of which, social media was at the heart of this week's question, and KCUR's Laura Ziegler is joining us now to talk about the question and your answers. Laura, good to see you. Welcome.
Hi, Brian. Yes, yesterday we had on this program Peggy Lowe, who did a piece about an incident at KU in which a professor tweeted a negative comment about the NRA. It spurred a vigorous debate about the rules around social media. And, of course, they continued to talk about that, addressed it as in the talk segment of the program. And that is certainly what we found out. It's a divisive, hot topic people are thinking a lot about.
So what kind of response did we get?
Well, not surprisingly, because it involves social media, most of our responses came via social media and mostly via Twitter, Facebook, and even online, even on voicemail. And that's because, obviously, we were tapping into that community, the social media community. People were pretty evenly divided on the question about whether you can be disciplined for what you tweet. But, again, clearly it remains an open question.
So a hot topic. Tell us some of the specific feedback we got.
Well, from the president of the Social Media Club in Kansas City, we got this tweet: to the extent they can fire you for any public speech, sure, it's a real issue, but the real issue is the blurring of lines between work and personal life. And that seemed to be kind of the central issue that people dealt with, that kind of ambiguity between the personal and the professional.
More than just a technology, social media
Absolutely.
Issue. So I wonder, how passionate were people in their responses? Were the feelings pretty
Extremely,
hot?
Extremely, yes. Yeah. People felt very strongly one way or the other. Among the no's, we had this on our voicemail: people who said that you should not be able to be fired for what you tweet. We got this response.
No, I don't believe that a person should be fired by their boss if they tweet something that is politically unpopular. This is against the rules of free speech, unless something like a crime is intended or threatened in the tweet. Thank you.
Of free speech, of course. That notion of free speech is what came up over and over. And this from Twitter: Nathan writes, firing someone for expressing a dissident voice is tantamount to eradicating autonomy in the name of peace. And Sheila writes, maybe sarcastically, I would really like to tweet honestly about this, but I'm afraid I might get fired.
Well, I did wonder if someone might put themselves at risk this week with our Tell KCUR question.
Well, that was certainly a question, but most definitely there were some people who were in favor of power on the part of employers employers. JJ tweets, yes, I think that the employer should have the power to discipline people. Social media users, he says, are basically running their own PR. With that freedom comes enough rope to hang oneself. And Andrew tweets, absolutely. There has to be accountability online as well as in life. And again, that's a lot of what was reflected in what we heard back, the fact that this is uncharted territory. People are still talking about it. It's an open question.
So I guess I wonder then, to what extent do people feel like there's a good solution? I mean, what do people think they should do then?
I think it's an open question. I think that's what people are still talking about. There was a long conversation that I'm told by our social media editor went on over 12 hours on Google+. Wow. And among those conversations, Sean wrote, I I may not like it, but it is the future of business and social media, and we aren't going to be able to escape it. And in response during that conversation, Deborah wrote, maybe these hiring policies will create more jobs with titles like social media patrol.
Oh,
good grief, she said.
Well, it does sound like a conversation we'll be having well into the future. It's a hot button issue, something lots of people are really thinking about.
Yes, it is. And you can continue that conversation about social media rules on our Twitter at KCUR, hashtag tell KCUR, on our Facebook and online at KCUR.org. And before we sign off, Brian, a correction. For a couple of hours yesterday, KCUR mistakenly ran a promo for our Tell KCUR segment saying KU Professor David Guth was fired. He was not, and we wholeheartedly regret that mistake.
You are hereby absolved. Laura Ziegler is the community engagement reporter, producer here at KCUR. Laura, thanks for being with us.
You bet.
Coming up, a look back and a look ahead for Casey Currents and morning programming here at KCUR. This is Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison. But why? Why on a Thursday morning are you hearing Central Standard when you've come to expect a live weekday broadcast of KC Currents? Well, KCUR is going through some changes with its local programming, which will mark the end of that program, at least in the form we have known it, at least for now. And joining us to talk about the changes and to look back at 9 years of KC Currents is the show's producer and longtime co-host, Sylvia Maria Gross. Welcome, Sylvia.
Thank you for having me on this side of the mic.
It's a little different, isn't it? So what's happening to the show?
Well, basically, we are going to be merging Central Standard and KC Currents on weekday mornings. We're going to become a talk magazine kind of hybrid show, which isn't that common. KC Currents has been what we call a magazine show, which means it's all produced pieces, many that take you out into the community that are reported on the scene, reporter pieces, and then coupled with interviews. And of course, Central Standard, like Up to Date, have been primarily live talk shows where people call in and participate in a community conversation that's sort of centered here at the studio. And we want a show that can both go out into the community and bring voices in, bring voices onto the air, bring the sounds of the places in our listening area to the air, and also create community conversation and bring those voices in over the phone, over Twitter, Facebook, as we just heard on Tell KCUR.
So KC Currents and Central Standard, they're getting together and they're having a baby.
Yes, essentially. And there, you know, is a gestation period.
Yes.
So we will really fully launch in the middle of the year. But on Thursday mornings, we've been experimenting with that format. So that's what you'd been hearing on Thursday mornings when I've been hosting kind of temporarily just to try and bring together. What does it sound like to have a piece that takes you somewhere, like a story we did? Well, just this week, it did the accent story where we did some reporting on the Kansas City accent. And then we opened up a conversation about accents. That was just last week. The week before, we had a story about somebody who was in detention, and we went out and talked to him and then came back and discussed the situation of immigrant young people who are brought here as children who are undocumented and how they can try and gain status.
So it's not really goodbye to KC Currents. It's just stay tuned and see what's next. We'll talk more about what's coming up next, but let's not let this moment go by without spending a few minutes looking back, because it really has been a great history for this program. Every week, the show opened by telling us what the mission of the program was. It was bringing us the voices and sounds of Kansas City's diverse communities. What did that mean to you, Sylvia?
Well, when the show was started, the station really wanted to do more to reflect the diversity of Kansas City. And there was a particular emphasis on the African-American and Latino communities, although not exclusively those communities. I think we looked at diversity broadly, but didn't forget that we wanted underrepresented voices on the air. So whether it was the African-American community here in Kansas City, or whether it was a story about the digital community, or a story about farmers, you know, they're all diverse communities, but we tried not to forget the idea that we were looking to represent underrepresented communities on the air, and we will continue to do that.
Well, so this week, KCUR's Suzanne Hogan also spent some time, she actually spent some time producing and reporting for KC Currents over the years. She compiled just a few of the great bits of life in Kansas City that the show captured over its 9 years. Let's listen to some of the best of KC Currents.
From KCUR News, this is KC Currents. Reporting news and culture in Kansas City's diverse communities and beyond. I'm Dolores Jones.
I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.
I'm Alex Smith.
And I'm Susan Wilson. KC Currents is KCUR's weekly magazine show. We use voices, stories, and sound to take you to neighborhoods around the region.
Central High School junior Jeffrey Stone is debating about United Nations peacekeeping operations. But he's talking about himself.
What you don't see is that I'm a soldier from the KC streets. I'm representing hard, trying to be the best I can be.
They have all these kids around me, loving me. They start out calling me Mr. Smith the first 10 years. The second 10 years, they call me Dad. Now the third 10 years, which is 30 years, they're calling me Grandpa. And that's a blessing. Look at that. Look how cute they look.
Necessarily don't need popcorn right now, but I'm gonna pop it just to keep the smell in the air, you know, keep people curious.
We have run a total of 2 blocks.
Yes.
And in those 2 blocks, you've gotten fist pumps, and you've gotten really weird looks, and you've gotten high fives. Is this typical?
Oh yeah.
The problem was the title: 30 Easy Ways to Lose 30 Pounds in 30 Days. It turned out to be a total disaster.
So you learned here in America that weight and age with women are two things that are very sensitive.
I can tell you I learned.
Travis Newsom says that a focus on strategy is why Kansas City has so many champion players today.
When we play dominoes, we talk about plays. Why did you make that play? What was your thinking when you made that play? Did you not know this was going to happen when you made that play?
Marble lovers from around the country come here to find marbles that meet their particular fancy.
We can't resist stopping for toys and marbles and marble mazes, and I knew we would enjoy it.
Sound is very much a part of our world.
Mike Corrigan calls himself the horn doctor. He shows me around his 5,000-square-foot warehouse, which is tucked away in an industrial park in Olathe.
So you are 99 years old, and you're still knitting.
I'm not knitting at all. I never knit in my life.
Oh, that's a crochet needle. So you're making a chain.
One here for every one of my years. I make them, and she counts them.
Friends wouldn't let the Warfords go home for a day or so after the floods. When they did, they found mud and silt in the sink, stinky, putrid water covering her antique furniture.
In fact, we had a Siamese cat and a 40-pound pig on the table that had floated in and then didn't know where to go.
Yeah, how much meat is actually on a frog leg? I mean, is it filling?
You need a lot of frog legs to actually have much of a meal. Usually what we do is we cook them, we save them until we have a few, and then we cook them up like in a fish fry.
At first, I really didn't know how to double dutch, but then my friends, they taught me how at recess.
They'll ask me where I was from, and I say I was from East L.A. And said, oh, you're from California. I said, hell no, that's East Lower Armadale. So they all get a kick out of that. A lot of people don't know about Armadale. Only people that live in Armadale know about Armadale.
Those were highlights from KC Currents over the years, that montage produced by Suzanne Hogan. You can hear it later today at kcur.org. So, Sylvia, we heard a lot of voices there that have been part of the show through the years, some recent, some a long time ago. I have to admit I'd forgotten that the show wasn't always hosted by you and Susan Wilson.
Exactly. Well, the original host was Dolores Jones, and then I co-hosted the show with Ty Chandler, who moved to New York or back to New York, and then Susan and I have been co-hosting for probably about 6 years now. So Susan has been an integral part of the show for quite a while. And then you've heard the reporting of Alex Smith for a long time. I think he's been for maybe 7 years. I haven't looked back, but he's now KCUR's health reporter. But
yeah, so Alex continues as a health reporter. What's happening with Susan?
And Susan will continue to be a contributor to the show. We don't know who the host of this show is going to be, and that's going to be something that we are determining in the next couple of months. But Susan will continue to be an integral part. You'll hear her stories and some regular segments from her.
Well, we have a few minutes. We'd love to hear from our listeners. If you have some great memories of KC Currents, if there's a story that has really stuck with you, or a neighborhood or community group or personality that you would never have known about, even though they're right down the street, except for this program, give us a call. 816-235-2888. 235-2888. 888. Share your memories of Casey Currents, or you can email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Sylvia, you must have some favorite stories of your own from over the years.
Well, it's just great listening back. I mean, part of it is as a reporter, sort of when you finish a show, you kind of put it in the can, and then you're like, oh, what's next? And those escape you. We re-aired a story just a few weeks ago on Casey Currents. That was one that really stuck with me. Teresa Cuevas, who just passed away, who was started an all-female mariachi group in Topeka in the late 70s, early 80s, and they were part of the Hyatt tragedy, and actually four of the women in that group passed away. It just was such a dramatic story, but it was also a personal story about a woman reinventing herself through music and using music to heal and discover a new part of herself in her late 50s, I think around 60, and then continuing to pass that music on to her family. It's just listening to her voice and how all of these tragedies and music affected her life. And she's somebody, when she's in Topeka, it's kind of on the edge of our listening area, but I think whose story is really from our area.
How did you find these stories?
Well, person in Olathe who I've gotten to know through the show just has let me know, who grew up in Topeka. And there's a lot of people I now know in Kansas City who grew up in that community where Teresa Cuevas did. And her story and the story of that group impacted that community so much. And you know, then they live here in Kansas City now.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the ways that the show itself almost created community, became part of the community that it was covering.
I think so. Yeah, people have always emailed and called and just let me know about stuff going on in the community. So I hope it's done that, and I hope it can do a lot more as a call-in show where people are more used to kind of calling in and interacting, I think, with our daily talk shows than they were with Casey Currents, which was a weekly magazine, which didn't have that come on in, call, join the show perspective.
Well, and I was going to ask about that. You had the opportunity these last few months to do some of the hosting with callers. How does that change the show for you?
Well, it is fun to have that dynamic. I mean, I think that on a magazine show, people are used to sitting back and listening and not necessarily interacting. And on a talk show, people are eager to interact and to tell their story. And so that's really been fun. And it's fun being live, too.
It is. I agree. So as we look to the future, obviously we're still going to be coming live on Thursdays and every weekday at 10 a.m. here on Central Standard. Sylvia, what can listeners expect in the coming months in this time slot during what you just called the gestation period for the new show?
So we're just kind of experimenting with some regular segments that when Casey Currents, we'd had the regular Odd Job segment, which we kind of inherited from the Walt Bodine show, and a segment called What Is That? That took us to interesting places. We'll continue to go places. And that's the magazine part of the show that we feel like is really key, that not only allows us to have reports on the show and reporting, but to bring more voices into the show. When we only can have the people who can come into our studio, it limits who can be on the air. And when we can go out and gather people's voices in the community and bring them, I think it broadens the spectrum of voices that you hear. So we'll just continue to experiment with that. And then we'll really launch a show with a defined format, of defined host and a defined sound and a defined name in the middle of the year.
I guess a question a lot of folks have is why make the change? Casey Currents was a popular program. Obviously, for the past year, this program's had a variety of hosts, but at some point, a host would be hired for it. Why change this and not just do what we were doing before?
Well, we wanted to be able to bring what we were doing on Casey Currents to a larger audience, which we do have during the midday, and pool our resources, really. I mean, at a station, we are expanding here at KCR. There's a lot going on, but we're a small station with a small news team, and it's made sense to pool our resources and pool the producing resources and the reporting resources and the hosting resources into one five-day-a-week show as opposed to one five-day-a-week show and then one weekend show.
If you have memories of Casey Currents, give us a call at 816-235-2888. A story that you wouldn't mind hearing again, 235-2888. What about the Sunday evening time slot where Casey Currents used to originally air and then the Monday night rebroadcast?
Right. And recently it's been two rebroadcasts, which we're afraid has been a little confusing to listeners, but we appreciate you bearing with us and listening and participating in all the shows we're doing. But Sunday and Monday evenings, we will be airing the TED Radio Hour, which is a new-ish show by NPR that that compiles and expands on those TED Talks that have become so popular online.
And as we look at the timeline, you've been saying a few months. Do we have a goal for when the new program begins?
May, June of 2014, which is the year we're in now.
And when will we meet the new host?
In the next month, probably.
Okay, very good. What is the topic? What are some of the topics that you hope get covered in the next year?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I was looking back at some of the things we did in the past in this kind of experiment stage that we've had the past couple of months where we looked at digital Kansas City, and we had one whole show about that where we went out and reported on some startups, on 1 million cups over at Kauffman, just what's mm-hmm. happening in that digital space, as some people like to say, in Kansas City. And we want to continue reporting on that community in a segment called Digital KC. We're cooking up a segment called Going to Kansas City. Last week on Tell KCUR, we gathered your stories about how you came here, and we want to regularly, that's something Susan Wilson's going to do, regularly tell stories about how people came here and why they stayed. We will continue to cover diverse communities in Kansas City, and education has been a big topic on the show, and religion has been a big topic on the show. It's something that we'll continue to look at.
You know, this hour has a pretty rich legacy at KCUR. This was the time slot of the Walt Bodine Show, which you mentioned earlier, inherited a couple of features from it. Walt, of course, passed away last year. Are there ways that his legacy lives on at the station, maybe in this show?
Well, when I think about talk formats, I just love the way Walt would say to callers, come on in. And there was a big living room and people were sitting there, and he invited the whole community to come on in and contribute. And that's something that I am excited about when I think of Casey Kearns having a live call-in segment, that allows people to just come on in and sit down and talk about the issues of the day.
So a last question for you, Sylvia. The word on the street is that we may not hear your voice on KCUR's airwaves the next few months. Why would that be?
Well, in the next couple of weeks, I'm expecting a baby daughter, so I will be going on leave for a few months. So that's where I will be, but I will be back.
We rest assured, KCUR Sylvia Maria Gross will be back. She has been the producer and co-host of Casey Currents. She'll be the producer of new program, the love child of Casey Currents and Central Standard, that will emerge on KCUR later this year. Sylvia, thank you, and all best wishes in all of it.
Thank you, Brian.
You can subscribe to our podcast. You can hear this conversation again. You can learn more about all our shows at kcur.org. Visit the Central Standard page there for more information. Tune in tomorrow when the food critics will be here. We'll be exploring Kansas City's best happy hours. And stay tuned now for Up to Date. The ethics professors are here talking about pot and protests. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR.